Welcome to the Creativity Cafe for the creatively adventurous and the relentlessly curious.
We have inspiring conversations with creative women from all over the world.
I'm Paige Baldwinando, and I'm a creativity coach who helps people maximize their creative potential, and I'm also a writer.
And I'm Jordana Matsuda. I'm an illustrator on my creative journey, with Paige helping me along the way.
We're both long-term residents of Japan, a country bursting with creative energy that inspires us every day.
So go grab a cup of tea and join us in discovering new creative landscapes here on the Creativity Cafe.
Hello, Jordana.
Hi, Paige.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
When you are going to see artwork, like let's say there's a show on here in Tokyo and you're like, I have to see that. Is there a medium that generally draws you that you want to see more than others?
Usually I'm going to see painters, hey?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, some kind of painted pictures. yeah, invariably.
Because you yourself are a painter.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's either painting or maybe sculpture. But in Tokyo, there's not so many sculptural elements to exhibitions.
True. Yeah.
Just a space.
That's right.
Yeah. It's pretty photography or paint, like paintings, I would say. How about you?
Yeah, I think for me too, I do tend to be interested in something that's like offbeat or different, right? That does interest me. We have annually, we have this Roppongi Art Night thing in part of Tokyo where there are all kinds of different installations, essentially, and a lot of them are moving. And actually, my husband just sent me a photo of several years ago, we went to that, and there was this giant rubber ball wedged between the columns of a building.
Oh, wow.
It was this huge red ball. And it was, you know, and a photo that I took of him, I guess it came up on his Facebook memories, of him like kicking it, pretending to kick it, right? which was allowed. But, and our kids were much smaller because it was a few years ago, but that type of thing really interests me, you know, so like where part of what you're being invited to think about is the relationship between the work and the space. Right.
It's interesting how like when we go to see shows or exhibitions, what have you, how I'm always curious how each person goes in and what they're thinking. Like whenever I'm going to see an exhibition, I'm always thinking, what was the artist's like mood when they painted this? Like what message were they trying to convey? Or and I just wonder, like, if everyone thinks that way or how deeply people think about, you know, the artist's motivations behind making their work.
Yeah, I wonder. I suppose everyone goes in with their own lens and their own set of questions that they have or not. You know, maybe some people are just going in to, like, have the experience and feel it.
Yeah.
It's less analytical and more experiential,
or
both. I don't know.
Yeah. So I think like, because I am not usually go to see paintings, there's never any question about like how it was made because it's obvious, you know,
right.
Paint is paint, you know, slightly different techniques or what have you, but it's a paintbrush and it's paint, you know, basically speaking. So which is why I find today's guest very, very intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Yes, today's guest uses a medium that I had never considered possible to be a medium in her field of bio art, which she is kind of pioneering. Like she is someone who's doing new things in this field. And her medium is mold spores.
Yeah, like when you first mentioned Celine to me, I had no idea like how that could be art. Like the concept was very abstract.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And as you try to picture it, it's quite difficult to picture. But when you look at the images of her work, part of what becomes so fascinating about it, the more you look at it, even more fascinating, I think, is how the medium itself, this medium of mold, asks, it creates other questions in you. You know, like, what does this mean? Like, why does the mold take this shape? What's happening here between these two different patches of it? You know, the questions that come up through the medium are. They take you even deeper into the subject.
Exactly. Like when I'm looking at her work, I'm just drawn into every tiny little detail. And like how it was made, how long did it take? How did those colors get there? Like how much control did she have over it? Like this, like 100 questions behind one piece of work, which, I wouldn't have if I was looking at a painting.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Because painting is a known quantity, especially.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that element of, you know, the medium itself as part of the expression, you know, as part of the meaning, is part of what I find so interesting about Celine's work. And as we listen to her talk about her work, she really brings in these fascinating philosophical ideas about the place in our world that these microorganisms have and the role they play in our lives without us even being able to see them.
Yeah. And like the way that she talks about her work, it really pulls you into what she does and makes you question, the things around you as well. And
Yeah, it really does. It asks you to pay a different kind of attention to the world. And I don't know about you, but I think that is the kind of art that I find most intriguing, most compelling, and most like exciting.
yes, because at first you don't know what it is, and it could be easy to just keep walking, but then when you dig into it and you find out about the messages that she's trying to convey and her ideas, it's just amazing. Like, of course, it all kind of clicks into place, and you want to know more about Celine. The more you talk to her, the more you want to know more about her. For me, anyway, I was like, everything she said, okay, I've got 10 more questions. I need to find out about this and this.
Yes.
It's a shame we only had an hour with her. Like we could have spoken to her for a lot longer because she has so much to share with the world. Her curiosity about the creative process, about human relations, about science, the way she puts it all together is it's amazing.
It really is. I totally agree. And I think she's such a great example of a multi-passionate person who weaves her
Yes.
passions, her learnings together in a way that is just so beautiful and so it creates an invitation for the rest of us to think about the world in a more complex way.
Yep.
Yeah. So with that, let's take a listen to our conversation with Celine.
Originally from Istanbul, Turkey, Celine Balci has lived in the United States since 2003. There, she's blazed her own trail in the field of bioart, a new direction in contemporary art that utilizes living organisms. Having been a researcher of microscopic pathogens in forests before she began her art career, Celine's studies questioned how microorganisms exist, interact, and impact our environment. Merging those questions with her art practice, her current projects use scientific materials and biological mediums, such as mold spores, to make the invisible microorganisms around us visible and allow us to see the micro world physically. In her far-reaching and visually stunning pieces, mold spores draw an abstract picture as they transform into a living paint agent. Celine's work invites viewers to reconsider their relationship with the natural world, particularly the microscopic organisms that share our environment and our lives. Welcome, Celine. It's so nice to have you.
Hello, thank you for inviting me. I'm so excited.
Yeah, we're so excited to talk to you today. I've been looking at your work all week and I'm just like, Wow, how, why? So many questions are coming up.
It's such wonderful, truly visually stunning work. So
it is really nice to hear that, actually.
it really is. Yeah.
I think when you add that layer of like science to art, it just, there's so many more questions, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
But our first question that we ask all our guests is, Celine, can you tell us, what is your first memory of doing something creative?
So we are going back to childhood, all right?
Yes.
You know what? Like, you know, when I was a kid, actually, I never think about to be an artist. I was more into music. I was like, you know, when I was a child, like, I remember like sitting at a piano and tinkering with the keys. And I was going to be a musician, actually, not an artist, not a visual artist. I mean, it is still, you know, art. But yeah. I was more into the music and piano. So, I mean, I wasn't playing anything impressive. I was just, you know, trying to just, you know, make my own songs, just a few notes here and there. But it felt like, you know, I was creating something new. And I just loved the feeling of being able to, you know, express myself through music at that time. And it's just a memory, like, you know. And you know what happened? So I never had my own piano, actually, when I was a kid. So in 2020, when the COVID hit, one of my neighbor wanted to just give away a piano. I was like, yes, I want that piano. And that was the best time to have that piano, actually.
Yes, the perfect time.
Exactly. I was so happy to have that, actually. And then, you know, it just, you know, took me back to my childhood right away. So I just started to, you know, play it again. But, you know, like, I'm in a different path now. But that's how I started, actually. Everything, like, this is how it started.
And how did you feel like when you first sat down at that piano again in your own home, getting to play it? Like, what was that experience like for you?
It was exciting, actually. So I just sat there I didn't even have to just, you know, change any of the chords and so on, actually. Everything was set so nicely. So I was like, okay, so what can I do? You know, I just opened the YouTube, you know, teaching, you know, kind of piano teaching lessons. And I just started to just, you know, get together all of the information back again. Everybody, all of my neighbors were helping me, actually, like, you know, bringing me some notes and books and so on about, you know, how to play the piano back. So I have to remember, of course, like, because I didn't touch the piano actually for the last, I don't know, about 30 years or so. But that was a really good moment, actually, that, you know, the neighbor wanted to just give away the piano. I was so happy.
Oh, what a wonderful story. I love that.
This
came into your life right when it was needed and you got to reconnect with it.
Exactly.
So, Sing, can you tell us a bit about your path towards where you are today as an artist?
Of course. So it took a little bit long time, actually, to be an artist for me. Mm-hmm. So I did my first degree. So obviously I'm from Istanbul, Turkey. So after graduating from my first degree in forestry engineering from the Istanbul University, we came to US with my husband. So he was working on his PhD and I was just, you know, doing some microbiology research studies at the universities, at different universities in the US. And during that time, I focused on studying plant diseases and the ecology of forests. And it was an incredible experience, actually, to explore how microorganisms live, interact, and shape our environment. And in 2004, like after a year, we came to US. I decided to take a new direction and enrolled in the photography department at the West Virginia University. And there, actually, that was my first opportunity for me to just, you know, experiment with projects combining art and science. And I found that there were so many exciting ways to merge that two fields and create beautiful and thought-provoking kind of work. So I graduated with that. Actually, I just started to just, you know, take a couple classes over there in the photography department. I just wanted to be a photographer. And I think I wanted to be so many things in life, actually. I started as a musician, you know, as a kid. And then I wanted to be a photographer. And then I graduated with a BFA, actually, from West Virginia University. And then in 2009, actually, I between that time, I worked as a photographer at the Smithsonian Institution for a while and so on. And in 2009, I decided to pursue my master's degree at the University of Maryland. And over the three-year period, that actually I really focused on how to merge biology and art even further. Mm-hmm. So my, of course, my background in microbiology, and I knew already all of the lab techniques that proved to be, like used in the labs. So I, you know, all of those things actually, I was able to, I mean, they just, you know, get all together, and I was able to develop a unique and innovative approach to my work. I mean, the whole education took a very significant amount of time and effort, actually. So my first degree, forestry engineering, and then I did the photography degree on top of that, and then master's degree on top of that. But it was absolutely necessary for me to develop the practice that I have today, actually. And I'm very grateful for all of the opportunities I had, you know, explore and grow in my field. You know, I worked like for a couple of years in the microbiology labs and so on, like, you know, 6-7 years I worked as a scientist, actually. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm just combining all this knowledge to create my artwork. But I, of course, like, you know, when I'm making the work or when I'm just explaining the work, there's always science, you know, the science background or the science information right behind the work. Mm. So there's always the information coming from me. I'm like a researcher, but at the same time, I am the artist. So combination of everything.
Wow. So I'm really like interested to like, just to go back a bit to when you decided to become a photographer, like what, like, do you remember that moment? Like what drove you to kind of make that pivot?
I mean, I always love photography. The black and white photography, manual photography. I don't know. I somehow, like, I really love the camera, the manual camera. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, you know, when I was in the, when I was living in Istanbul, so I was always the one, you know, the friend that had the photo camera actually on her back. So I was always like taking photos of friends and so on. And I never ever exist in my photographs actually, because I'm always the photographer taking the photographs of my friends. So it was just a hobby actually. I was just taking photos, black and white especially. I really love the black and white one. And then we were in West Virginia, Morgantown. So I'm from Istanbul. So it's like a, you know, it's a huge city, right? 20 yeah. million people lives in there. And then we moved to Morgantown, West Virginia. And it was like, it's a small city. It's beautiful. The nature is beautiful. But I was only 23 years old and I wanted to do more. And I wanted to be in the art. So I just wanted to take a couple classes, actually. This is how it started. I said, like, I'm just going to go and then learn, you know, black and white, darkroom, manual photography techniques and so on. And then that led me to finish the degree. And then I just finished the art history minor on top of that. So I couldn't just stop myself. Like, learning is kind of, I'm a very good student, I can say. I can just, you know, finish like a couple more degrees, actually. Like, I really love learning.
Mm-hmm. I can sense that about you. And also, you know, it sounds like you just have all of these different interests, right, that you can go into very deeply and weave together, which is so beautiful.
Yeah, I love learning new things. I think that's, you know, that's what it's about.
Yeah, it's just this endless adventure, right, in life.
Exactly. Yep.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, wonderful. So yeah, that makes me curious. Like, as you talk about, you know, moving from Istanbul to West Virginia, which is must have been a really big culture shock in some ways to
it even, was.
Yeah. As you say, yeah. Like a big city, an international city, to West Virginia is just geographically so, so beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. And also, yeah, it's just very different than a big international city.
But I was lucky that it was like Morgantown was a university city, actually. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were like a lot of students and then, you know, and you can learn a lot, you know, from the university, yeah. Of course, like it's a huge, big university. So that helped at some end. But, you know, it was a cultural kind of, you know, change.
Yes.
Definitely. I mean, it's been 20 years now since I'm in the United States. So now I can, you know, understand the system, understand the people, or, you know, the culture a little bit better. But every day is a new, you know, I'm still a student of learning everything in this country. So every day is a new class, let's say.
Yeah, well, we understand that.
Don't yeah. Yeah. It's like, actually, I can't believe I'm still learning after all these years.
I know.
Yeah, I totally understand how you feel, actually.
We have both been here about the same amount of time you've been there. So I came to Japan in 2003. Jordana came in 2004. So we're on similar tracks, I think, in terms of the length of time and the amount of, because it's funny, there's some things you understand very well and other things you're like, wait, what? What's going on? What?
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that takes me to our next question, which, you know, is about your piece, Bordered World, which is so beautiful. And for anyone who hasn't seen it yet visually, I'll just describe it for a moment. You mounted petri dishes on gallery walls in these constellations that form the shape of a world map. And within each petri dish, you allowed the fungi or mold to take their own shapes and interact together freely. And it creates these just amazingly beautiful patches of color on color and shape on shape. And then when you zoom out, when you stand back, there is this formation of a map of the world. And I just find it so moving, this piece, because maybe in part because of what we're talking about here now, like the interconnectedness of the world is on view. And then there's also this almost like a microcosmic view of the ways we separate ourselves and each other within that context. So yeah, I would just love if you could share with us what inspired you in creating Bordered World and what you learned through the process of making it.
Sure. There were actually that whole installation took us like 4 days, working three people putting up. Yeah. And then there was actually work, like almost like 2 months of work behind the whole work. Because all of those petri dishes, you know, they were all alive, actually, alive cultures growing in them. So, you know, you have to just pour PDA, which is the base jelly kind of base, actually, just feeding the mold spores. So it just took me like 2 months to actually just, you know, pour it into the petri dishes, because it's like 2,500 petri dishes, and then growing and then inoculating the mold and then growing the mold and so on. It took like a couple months to finish up, but it became the one of my best work, actually. I want to repeat it again with different colors. But the goal, I mean, I think the goal behind all of my work is like, you know, going to come into the same idea at the end, like, you know, when we will talk about the other things, like, you will notice that for sure. But the goal was to investigate the relationships between various organisms and then how they impact their environment and so on. But just, you know, utilizing the petri dishes and mold, I was able to create this stunning portrayal of these interactions that prompts the reflection in a little tiny world. Sometimes I call myself as God, and then I'm creating this, you know, world for mold spores to just grow. I'm kind of like, you know, I'm a very curious experimenter, actually. So I created this universe or world for microorganisms. And this universe is like a prototype of our world. So I'm taking these microorganisms from nature and then putting them in an artificial environment in the petri dishes. So the environment, so I'm just going to give you a little bit background information, because, you know, it will just, you know, it says a lot, actually, about the work. So the environment that I'm creating in the petri dish, it is designed to restrict the growth of the mold, or like spread of the mold. So it's very restricted. The water is restricted, the food, the space, everything is very limited in their universe, the universe that I created. So it forces actually microorganisms to compete for resources, because everything is limited, so they have to survive. So at first glance, this might seem like an unkind experiment. So I'm just, you know, creating this world, putting them in, and then I'm just letting them live actually with their own rules. But it is really actually quite fascinating to watch how they behave. So limiting the sources available, I was able to just observe how different microorganisms interact with each other. Some may be able to adapt and thrive in this, you know, restricted environment. Some, they can't do it, and then they were struggling and then eventually die off. So, you know, because they are not able to just, you know, fight enough. So I tested actually some other species for this work. So you see only the red and black. So I just tested like many different colors. Like I don't have too many colors actually in my color palette. Like, you know, I have yellow, black, white, reds, purple sometimes, if I'm like a green, you know, I mean, it depends on the seasons and so on too. So mm-hmm. I use the red and black ones to create a strong contrast, actually being able to just, you know, see on the white walls. So also they were the ones actually who created the strongest borders. So mm-hmm. in each petri dish, even though I use the same species, use the same food material, actually it's potato based agar. So they created different scenarios actually in each petri dish. So that depended on the humidity or the amount of the food that I supplied for them in the petri dish. So it was so interesting to see how they acted differently actually with the given resources in each petri dish. But overall it was creating the world. So I thought about like a couple of things while working on the project. So first is like many humans tend to believe that they are the sole inhabitants of this world. We think that we are the only ones, you know, right?
Yeah.
Often like, you know, disregarding the presence of other living beings, both visible and invisible to the naked eye. Like, you know, I mean, these are the things that we cannot see. I'm just taking them from the nature, giving them the right food, the space, and so on. So they are just, you know, growing with their own characters and with their own color, actually. I'm not even just adding any, you know, additional color on top. So it's just, you know, and we are just ignoring them, like that they're there, but they are actually pretty important. So it is important to acknowledge and appreciate the presence of these beings and their contribution to our ecosystem, basically. And by doing so, we can learn actually from them and work towards a harmonious coexistence with all living things in our world. Another thing that I was thinking, the work actually can teach us about the importance of like resources management in the natural world. Yeah. I mean, in the real world, right? Yeah, resources are often limited. We don't have, you know, unlimited resources, but we are not just noticing that. And all organisms must compete for survival. Maybe not compete. We don't even have to compete, right, to survive. We yeah. can just, you know, happily living in this world. But by studying, you know, how organisms interact or how microorganisms interact in this restricted environment, we can actually, by looking at that work, we can gain insights into the larger ecological system that govern life on our planet. Mm-hmm. And another thing I thought, like, you know, I was like, you know, thinking about the other day, like, you know, what led me to that work? Also, I was thinking like humans. We all humans have brains that, you know, we can think. The other organisms doesn't have that ability, but they have, you know, their instincts, right? You know, yeah. But we may alter actually our behavior or psychology with our brain to reduce the reliance on a particular resources. Sometimes we do it. Sometimes we are like trying to control things. Sometimes we don't. We don't even care. So it is kind of like disappointing to see that, you know, human beings, despite having this, you know, having this nice brain capable of like complex thoughts and problem solving, are not using the brain to use our resources properly. Instead, mm-hmm. like we just continue to engage in destructive activities such as like, you know, deforestation, pollution, overconsumption of resources, leading to species extinction, I don't know, environmental degradation and so on. Like we're just, you know, our lack of foresight and willingness to prioritize short-term gain over long-term sustainability is kind of like alarming. And then, you know, we are having like problems for the future generations. So I'm always like thinking like, whenever, I mean, like my other work is like kind of connected to this kind of thoughts too, but I mean, we must just take responsibility for our actions before it's too late, of course. So, I mean, but for this particular work, by creating this little tiny universe for the microorganisms, I was able to observe the complex dynamics of life and death and adaptation and competition. And then I was just able to see it like in a larger ecosystem, like our world. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, like, you know, that's what I was like thinking when I was working on that project.
Yeah, that is beautiful. Like that interweaving of learnings and note, like the things you noticed. And it really is quite interesting when you hit upon, you know, the artificial restriction of resources, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you purposely restrict the resources so that they will compete, right? And that's very interesting to think about in our current human situation too, isn't it? Like,
exactly.
What is restricting resources? Who is restricting resources? And what happens as a result? I think when we take that view, because initially it might look like, oh, well, you know, these organisms in the petri dish are naturally competitive. They're just going to compete no matter what. What you're saying sounds like that's not true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily compete no matter what. They're competing because the resources are scarce.
Yeah. I mean, that forced them. But actually, I just give them the very rich food resources. I mean, but sometimes, like, you know, so I did the time lapse movies actually for a couple of the you know, when I was testing, I was like time lapsing, so I just wanted to see how they're reacting to each other. Some were like very respectful to each other, so they were creating this border and then they were stopping there, and then nobody was going to the other side, so it was kind of like, wow, okay, you know, they found the peace over there,
right?
Some of them were like more aggressive, so they were like growing faster than the other ones, and then they were like leaving like little tiny spaces for the other ones. It was like a kind of another story. And I saw one actually that was very, very aggressive, that it grew on the other one actually and ate the other one. So I was like, okay, wait a second, there's something going on here. Yeah. So even though the food was enough, actually, like, you know, I just, you know, I had this three different scenario. On the one, there was this peaceful. On the second one, you know, I mean, yeah, one was aggressive, the other one wasn't that aggressive. But on the third one was very aggressive, that even the, you know, the other one didn't even have any opportunity to just, you know, live or survive in this environment. So that's, you know, actually, like, you know, if you just think about our world, like, this is like what's happening actually in our world too.
Yes, yeah. And in your piece, you know, notably, it's called Bordered World, because there are borders also with the petri dishes themselves form these borders, right? So that,
exactly.
Yeah, so that, like, you know, each individual dish is its own little world, whereas for us on the globe, on the planet, like, we are, there are no, those borders that we have, the national borders, are entirely artificial and man-made, right? So we don't necessarily have those same borders, really. You know, we're not stopped by the glass of a petri dish. We have the ability to impact each other on every level across borders in a way that I think was made especially, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, I don't know, like exceptionally scarily during COVID, as we saw.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if your work with, you know, your work overall has impacted how you thought about COVID and vice versa.
Actually, COVID was good to me. So, like, you know, I know it was horrible for the world, but I was really able to just explain my work better, actually. So, you know, they're like all, you know, all my work is like, you know, having the microscopic entities. It was more understandable to viewers, actually. So it just, you know, the whole pandemic provided an opportunity, actually, for me to explain my work more effectively. Because, like, you know, I mean, we weren't able to just see this virus, right? You know, it's everywhere. But we weren't able to see it. Like, this is exactly what I'm working with. So, I mean, these things are living in the nature. We just do not see them. And then they are really important for our ecosystem or world. I mean, even us, actually, like, you know, like, you're in your room right now. even on your skin, on your table, on the computer, you know, on the keyboard, or on the air that you're breathing right now, they all, you know, I mean, it is filled with microorganisms. They're everywhere, even like in us, like they're in us, and they're helping us, right? But we just don't see them. So it was just, you know, like, I mean, I was able to really explain my whole work actually much better to the viewer actually by using the, you know, remember the virus, the COVID virus, your example like that. We don't see them.
Right, right. That's such a great Yeah, people could be like, oh, okay, this is this is what you're talking about. This is
Exactly. And another thing actually, like I mean, of course the whole pandemic has, you know, reinforced the significance of the, you know, our relationship to the natural world and our impacts to the environment and so on. And also this virus was in the nature for a long time, right? We, you know, we didn't know it actually, but it was in the nature somewhere. It didn't just, you know, get out from a, you know, from a lab or something. It was there already, but it wasn't balanced. So it wasn't disturbing anybody. It was just living there its own life and everything was peaceful. But however, we just, you know, disturbed its balance, and then, you know, it started to just grow and grow and grow. And then, you know, it just, you know, caused us a problem. So actually, like, this is like, you know, all about us, like, right? You know, we are just disturbing the nature. We are disturbing the balance. We are disturbing our ecosystem. And then now we are just having problems. And then this is not going to end, of course, right? You know, we're going to have more and more and more viruses and, you know, problems like this in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's part of what is so important about your work, is that you're bringing people's attention to this in ways that COVID also did, right? But bringing people's attention to the fact that, you know, these microorganisms are everywhere and you are interacting with them, whether you know it or not. Like in your piece, Fertile Faces, I love this piece. It's so fascinating where you, again, for anyone who hasn't physically seen it, I'll just describe it a little bit. You cover Polaroid photos taken of participants' faces with mold spores collected from their own bodies, and then allow the mold to populate the images of their faces as it grows. And it creates this like amazing textural, you know, topography. You can see what was populating this human's body. And of this project, you write, "The unseen inhabitants' interactions and their natural forms create a new identity for the participants. Mold spores that we recognize as harmful reconstruct these portraits." So this idea of like the unseen world and its interaction with what we do see is something that shows up so much in your work. And in this particular piece, it sounds like part of what you're asking people to do is to consider, here are the ways that actually these microorganisms are helping to form your identity and your life without you even knowing it. So I'm curious, like, what has emerged for you as you have spoken with people about these ideas, or as you have, you know, taken your work further and further? What have you noticed about how people respond to this idea?
Actually, like, you know, again, like that work is too a little bit related to all of my, you know, other works. I mean, as an artist, you know, we are just, you know, capturing, portraying the beauty of the world around us, right? You know, I mean, this is most likely like, you know, what we are doing in art. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was like, what about the parts of the world that we cannot see with our eyes? Like, it is part of the world too. So the micro world is like comprised of microscopic organisms that exist all around us. And it's often like overlooked, but plays a crucial role in our daily lives, like from the bacteria in our gut that help us digest the food, to the microbes that keeps our skin healthy, or these tiny organisms are, you know, very essential to our well-being, like I said before. Mm-hmm. Also, like, so, I mean, I will just, you know, come there like slowly, but the role of mold spores in the ecosystem is very important because it is like breaking down the dead organic matter, like organic materials and so on, or returning essential nutrients to the soil or to the environment back. So it is actually like, you know, it's helpful, and it is maintaining the balance of our ecosystem and sustain the life cycle, right? You know, this is like part of their role. But we are just not seeing it it's not immediately visible, but as an artist, like, I bring this, you know, attention to these unseen layers of the world. And when we take the time to appreciate the micro world, we are reminded that there's much more to the world than what we can see with our eyes, actually. It's kind of like awe-inspiring kind of realization, like, you know, we're just able to see, and it reminds us that we are never truly alone, actually. Even though you're alone, you can be alone, but you are not truly alone in this world. In that work, so I captured the Polaroid photos of the participants' faces, and then I covered them with the food material. And then I asked them, actually, like, you know, there was a jelly kind of food, actually, right on top. And then I said, you know, I'm just going to leave the Polaroid photo with you so you can touch it. You can put it into your head, hair, or face, or, you know, just touch it, you know, somehow touch it so it can just catch. It's like almost like catching a photograph, actually. So it will just, if you touch it with your fingers or with your face, with your hair, it will just, you know, catch whatever you have in your body, basically. So I collected the mold spores from their bodies, and as the mold grows, it populates the images of their faces, and then it just created a new identity for the participants. So it was like a, you have it in your body, but you're not able to see, basically. When I completed the portraits, actually, some of the participants reacted very unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. It is well known that, you know, we all have these microorganisms living in our bodies. These tiny organisms play a crucial role in our overall health and well-being, of course. And however, many organisms play a crucial role in our, when we just die, actually, they are going to be decomposing our bodies, right? This is what's going to happen. Like, you know, we don't notice it, or we don't think about this. So the thought of our bodies being decomposed by these tiny microorganisms sounded unsettling to some participants, actually. When I just show my work, I completed like 10 or 15 of them when I was at the residency. And then, you know, they were all fine. Like, you know, everybody was fine. And then just, you know, giving me the samples and so on. And then at the end, they were like, wait a second, you know, they were like very disturbed by it. So it just, you know, it evoked like disgust or fear as we imagine our bodies being consumed by these tiny creatures. However, it's important to remember, you know, this is a natural process, right? You know, it occurs in all living organisms. The decomposition of our bodies is an essential part of the cycle of life and that. And you know what? We have to understand this. We are not alone in this world. Again, like, I'm going to be coming back to our first question, right? We are not alone in this world. Mm-hmm. And then we have to die. You know, we have to die to just, you know, give life for other things. So we have to accept this. Maybe, I mean, this work is just, you know, showing the whole life circle, kind of. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we without the activities of these microorganisms that live in our bodies will not be able to break down, return to the earth. So, I mean, while it is like difficult to imagine our bodies being consumed by these tiny organisms, it is important to understand that this is a necessary process for the life, you know, to continue. Instead of being afraid or repulsed by this fact, we can embrace it and then appreciate the beauty of the nature cycle, and then just remember that we are not alone. Like, you know, we have to give life back to the earth because we took it from there, so we will just give it back there. I know it's kind of tough, you know, conversation, but
it's fascinating. I think, like, the Faces project that you did, in a way, like, highlights how, like, as a generally speaking, people feel like mold is something we need to get rid of, hey?
Like, yeah, exactly.
We're always taught, mm-hmm. like, that clean it off or keep things clean, and mold has such a status of being something we need to get rid of. So I think this project really, and like what you just mentioned, brings it to the surface of, no, we need this. This is a part of the life cycle. So I think that's really that friction, isn't it, between what we think about mold, but why we actually need it, I think, is really interesting.
Exactly. We think like, you know, we don't want mold anywhere, like in your
exactly,
house.
Exactly.
You are just spraying with Lysol or like bleach or something. And we want to kill it. But I'm like, okay, I'm just going to use it. Come on. You know, we're just going to create something new with it. Like it is going to be a new life given to the mold, actually. So it will just create something new for me. So I'm in love with mold, of course.
And I really like the time lapse one you did of yourself, Celine, that with the mold on your face. It was so beautiful. It's almost like your body, you know, your upper part of your body was turning into like stars. And yeah, that whole process from start to finish, it's like, oh, that in itself is like a set of images would just be so beautiful. Yeah, I really love that.
Yeah. Well, if I come to Tokyo, I'm going to bring my equipment so we can just, you know, do it for you too.
Yes.
Or if you visit Maryland sometime, we can just, you know, repeat it. I mean, this is a project that I will just, you know, it's an ongoing project, so I will never stop. whoever visits my studio, I'm like,
give me some of your mold.
And then, oh, I'm just going to take some samples from your body. That's it.
I love that.
It's like I'm creating a history of, you know, what is living in, you know, we are in 2023 right now. So this is what was living in humans' body, basically. Because plus I cover all of those Polaroid or all of my work actually with epoxy resin. So it is kind of like I'm creating this historic kind of capsule that, you know, I mean, in the future, maybe somebody can just look in and just see, oh, there was this mold spore living in 2023. Now we don't have it, maybe, for example. So it's kind of a historical record, actually, that I'm creating.
I love that idea. And it also, you know, like, so that plays into another piece that you did that I really love, too, the Invisible Istanbul work that you did where you covered images of the city with samples collected from the locations of the images. Show, like, what was there, what was living there in that moment, in that place. And that really is a beautiful example of what you're talking about. Like, here's a record of this place, this time, what was going on here, and also a record of the human activity that was creating, you know, that small ecosystem in that moment, right? Whatever pollution was going on or anything else like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Have you done that in other places as well, I wonder?
You know what? I didn't. So it was for a residency when I was in Istanbul. It was like November 21. So I was there for only like 2.5 weeks. So it's on slides. It's on microscopic slides. So I wanted to just keep the size small first, because, you know, I had like a very restricted time period. It was only like 2.5 weeks. So I had to just grow it like so quickly. Second, like those microscopic slides, actually, we use them actually under the microscope, right? You know, when we are looking things in detail. So I wanted to just create that effect actually on that work. Like, these are small, we look at them under the microscope. So we have to focus to the problem. So actually, there's a huge problem in Turkey. So in Istanbul, particularly, there's an environmental, you know, a lot of problems, actually. I mean, like, population is 16 million to 20 million. I mean, they say it's 16 million, but I believe it's 20 million. It's the largest city in Turkey, but unfortunately, they are like experiencing environmental pressures due to population growth, industrialization, rapid, you know, urbanization, and so on. And then they are just experiencing increased air, water, and sea pollution. So it's a huge city, and then it's not good. So I used the landscape images of Istanbul. I put them to the slides, and I interrupt the charming scenery with mold spores isolated from its own ground. So it's I use the mold spores to show the destruction, actually, the pollution on the nice looking Istanbul image, because it's a really nice city and I'm from Istanbul. I grew up there. I love the city, but it is really, you can just feel and see the pollution. So I said, like, okay, I'm just going to go and then just, you know, get these mold spores and then pollute the nice looking Istanbul images. And then that's, and but also like it creates a memory of Istanbul. It is like documenting, preserving, and creating kind of a historical record of living beings during, you know, my time over there. Like, you know, I was there for like 2.5 weeks. It just, you know, making that historical record of living being things during my residency time. So it might change because we are just always like, you know, disturbing the balance. Whenever we disturb the balance, you know, other things will just pop up. Like, for example, a single pathogen may take over and cause more environmental problems, actually, when we just, you know, disturb the balance of that ecosystem in Istanbul. So it's just, you know, it's important to document such issues to understand the problem better. I mean, like, for example, like the COVID-19 pandemic we talked a second ago, because we are just, you know, disturbing the whole ecosystem, maybe many other stronger microorganisms could be waiting for their opportunity, much like, you know, during the COVID-19 pandemic. Maybe it will be another problem. So actually, when I was working as a scientist, I was just working on this issue. So when we just, you know, hit to the balance and then we are just disturbing the balance and then one will just gain the aggressive behavior and then we'll just, you know, disturb the whole environment. So that's just, you know, that's what I was thinking like when I was creating that piece too. And of course, like, you know, it is just, you know, showing me the beauty and then the complexity of the natural world and how it interacts with the world we see. It's just, you know, the seen and the unseen is kind of like making me like, you know, very excited, actually.
Yeah, yeah. That is, you know, the piece that the idea that comes forth most strongly from your work that really makes me think personally, like, about, yeah, the unseen world around us in ways that, you know, as you were saying earlier, it can be disconcerting and like a little scary to think about it. And also that doesn't make it any less true, you know? And I think part of what we're grappling with as a species now is how to handle, how to think about, how to know as true things that we can't necessarily see every day, like, for example, climate change. Like, we know that it's just factually happening, even if we don't have physical evidence every single day in front of our eyes, you know? So this idea of making the invisible visible, and you do it in such a visually arresting way, is very compelling to me.
We are denial, you know, we are just, yes. Yes, trying to just not to see, and then we are not disturbed. I mean, sometimes you are disturbed, but it just, you know, goes away quickly. Our brain forgets.
Right. Yes, exactly. So, Celine, what is a project that you're currently working on that you're excited about? Is there something that you've got going now? I know you recently moved your studio and you've got some different space. So I'm curious what you've got going on there.
So right now I am just... you know, working with the eco anxiety. So it's kind of, look at that. There's a new word actually for the global warming or ecological kind of things, eco anxiety. So my eco anxiety forced me to realize a new project. So, you know, all our activities, human activities, we are just destroying the ecosystems by acquiring more land to build homes, cities or ecosystems, and, you know, we are just, you know, transforming ecosystems into agricultural fields to feed the ever-increasing population and so on. So all of our activities affect the climate. It just creates a climate crisis, endanger all life forms on Earth and so on. And then perhaps actually, like, all of these activities actually affecting the microorganisms too. So currently, what I do is I start to create plaster castings of the nature. So they are like botanical casts. So, you know, as I said before, like I'm like doing this historical recording of, you know, what is living during that time period in the work. So now I'm just adding more things on it and then I start to cast the nature. So they are like botanical casts there are like insects and, you know, whatever you can see in nature. So I'm even like, you know, trying to tree barks and so on. So there's a way of like casting the whole nature with the plaster. So I plan to combine it with my lovely mold spores and microorganisms. And then somehow, like, I'm just going to create a new body of work with that. So there will be more known kind of, I mean, like, you know, I'm all of my work is almost like abstract kind of looking work. So you cannot just, you know, see any understandable shapes. But this time there's going to be some plants, and tree shapes and so on, so we can just, you know, make a connection with the nature. So I'm just working on it. So it is just, it was so excited. I was so excited because I just I just started to just, you know, take some ceramics class. And then I said, like, you know what? I am somehow going to use the ceramics in my own work. So that led me to this, actually. So I just started to cast the nature. And then somehow I'm just going to grow mold spores on it. And then we'll see where it's going to go. I mean, as I said before, I'm always learning. So I'm just learning new things every single day.
So I just love it. I just love it.
So and the thing is, I mean, due to the fact my the work, actually, it's so scientific. So I have to do new things. Like, you know, I mean, there's always a research. There's always experimentation in more work. Like, you know, I'm always like doing trials, mistakes, and then, you know, I have to just, you know, do this all the time, because otherwise I'm not going to be able to just create new work. I mean, we are just seeing these microorganisms and petri dishes in a lab environment. They are not, they don't belong to an artist studio, right? So you have to figure out how to just, you know, use them, basically.
Yes.
So every day is a new research day.
I love that.
Wow. Yeah. So, Celine, when you're going through your creative process, do you ever find that you're unable to access that creative flow? And if that happens, like, what kind of things do you do to kind of get yourself back into that creative flow?
I mean, mostly, actually, but as I said before, like, you know, I mean, since this work requires too much research, sometimes I face like a shortage of materials when creating something. So I'm like, you know, I mean, I'm like, I'm looking for new things. I have to just find a new thing all the time. And, you know, I mean, that led me actually to the clay, actually. And it's the potentials of like integration into my art somehow. And I was so in love with making pottery, actually, with the clay. So I was like enjoying that time. And then that just, you know, unlinked my work and the, you know, the pottery work. But then I was so enjoying making the pottery and then making coffee cups and so on. But at the end of learning of that process, I was again like coming back to my own work. And I'm always like asking, okay, how can I use clay now in my own work? So I'm just like, you know, you have to learn new things. Like, for example, Photoshop. You just go in and learn it. And then you just, you know, create beautiful designs and so on with the Photoshop. But at the end, I'm like, I mean, how I can use this in my own work? Like, I'm always asking that question to myself. Like, I'm doing something, I'm learning a new thing, and then how can I put this into my own work? But that always like comes like, you know, after a month or so, like I'm just enjoying that new process. And then I'm like coming back to the work. So whenever I stop and then I cannot just, you know, create, I'm just, you know, going and then looking for a new material for sure. And then learning that, spending some time, clear up my mind. And then I'm like, okay, let's go back and then just, you know, put the new language into my own work. Actually, this is what happened in my, you know, science background too. So I knew science. And then after that, I just said like, you know, I'm just going to go and then, you know, learn art. And then I did my master's on top of that. And I was like, okay, now how am I going to just, you know, put my previous knowledge in science into my own art practice now? So it's always like, I think I love combining things together. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's what I was thinking too, as you're talking, like, it just sounds like you love this interweaving, right? Like you
exactly.
You go out and you learn something and you bring it back and you weave it in. and like you take the constraints of your situation, like you were talking about with the Istanbul project, like where you had some time and space constraints and you use that to make a different thing and to make the most of what it is you do have.
Yeah, I mean, you have to always like plan ahead, because these microbes, like, you know, if you're a painter, you can work like 2 or 3 nights straight until morning, and then you can just create one work, right?
Yes.
But I can't do that. Like, I have to have in that, you know, schedule for the microorganisms. Like, they're not gonna grow like in 3 nights. Whatever I do, they're not going to grow. Like, I have to wait their own schedule. So, I mean, they're gonna grow like in a month period. And that's that. That's their nature. And if I'm going to collaborate with the microbes, then, you know, I have to accept their own nature. Actually, I collaborate with my mold spores. How about that?
Cool. That was pretty cool. Oh, Kate, it's just been so nice speaking to you. Thanks. Thank you so much for sharing your work and your ideas and your path with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking and then just explaining more, actually.
Yeah, yeah. It's just wonderful to go into that depth and to hear the passion you have for your work as well. It's contagious.
Thank you so much. It pushed me actually more thinking now, like, you know, with your questions and then with your, you know, comments and so on. So I'm, you know, my brain is so open now, like I have to just, you know, sit down and then take some notes on top of this.
Oh, it's so exciting. I can't wait to see what comes next for you. And
next time
I'm in Maryland, I would love to meet you.
Oh, please.
Because I will be there sometime soon. I don't know when, but I will. So, Celine, if someone wants to know more about your work and find out about you online, where can they go to do that?
I have a website, CelineBalchi.com. And also, I'm very active, actually, on Instagram. So my microbial growth. But if you just, you know, put my name and then, you know, it should just, you know, pop up. So it's microbial growth.
Yes.
And yeah, website. And, you know, I'm pretty active on the Instagram, on social media. I'm just, you know, putting lots of studio shares actually to the Instagram. So
wonderful. And Jordana will also include those links in the show notes, right, Jordana?
Yes, I will. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you again so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. It's been wonderful to get to know you.
Oh yeah, that was enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so this question comes from Emily in Toronto, Canada, and she's asking, I recently rediscovered working with clay, which I hadn't done since I was a teenager, and I love it. Have you guys ever gone back to an art form you'd previously left behind, and what was it like when you did? How about you, Jordana?
Oh, I think I've got a feeling we're both going to say the same thing.
Maybe.
My younger days, I always used to, I really love drawing and I'm constantly drawing, so that's by the by. But when I was a teenager, I used to love doing collage. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we're gonna say the same thing. Especially for birthday cards, like anybody's birthday card, I would always make a collage on the front with like images I thought represented that person or that person would like. And of course, I've gone back to it recently as well, completely due to the workshops you've been running with one of our previous guests, Elena. Yeah. So, and I've really found a new sense of creative freedom with that. I think having collage sometimes takes an element of thinking out for me, which I do have a tendency to overthink every little thing I do. And having, you know, images there already allows me to work a bit more intuitively, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So in the last few months, I've really enjoyed doing collage with you. That's for sure. How about you?
Yes. Yeah. It's the same.
Same, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so yeah, when I was a teenager, I don't know if there was something going on in the 90s where like collage was,
I think where... in terms of like, you know, editorial work, there was a lot of collage style design back then.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
And it was really an era of magazines, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I loved magazines as a teenager. I just loved them. And for better or for worse, because some of them were better for my mental health than others, right?
But, I know. When I think back to some of the things I used to read when I was like 13, 14, I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, I just loved the experience of looking through images and picking them out and then, yeah, rearranging them into something else that was entirely of my own making. And I, for whatever reason, kind of left off doing that when I was in university, although I did get really interested in a female collage artist from Germany who was quite big in the 20th century named Hannah Hoke. And she does amazing, really interesting collage work. When I was in university, I got really interested in that. But I didn't do much collage. I think there was also just like physical restrictions to my environment where it wasn't as easy to do it or whatever. But anyway, yeah, this year I've come back to this medium that is so powerfully interesting and intuitive and allows for so much range of expression, right?
Mm.
Like, yeah. Like, are you finding that as you make the collages, you feel like you're able to express things differently than you would have in another medium?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think often with me, I have an image in my head already of what I want to draw or make or have you, and that it can be very time consuming, and I always work slower than my brain wants me to. And I feel like collage helps me to get to where I want to get to it quicker in terms of that creative energy that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to piece together and it feels more rewarding in right. the short term. In that moment of wanting to make something quickly, when you just have limited time, or even regardless of time, there's something, I don't know, this is different. That process is a different, there's a different energy to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain in an eloquent way, but I just find it's a very rewarding process, and I'm always really happy with how my collages come out, and always feel motivated to keep creating every time I've done a collage recently.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the images you create are really beautiful and feel like symbolically powerful, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that can really come out of this process is that there are these subconscious connections that we don't necessarily know we're making while we're cutting things or gluing things. And then when the image comes together, it's like, oh, that, I see the connection there now, you know?
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. And the other piece of this that I'm curious about for you, like we have, so Helena does work with goddesses. That's a big theme for her. And we are collaborating in such a way that the goddesses, we choose one goddess for each month, and that goddess's energy will guide the sort of direction. It'll hold kind of a certain energy or space for the work. So for example, in July, we channeled the energy of the goddess Aphrodite, who was rebellious and really pretty insistent on following her own way and shining her own light and doing these things. Like, do you find that the goddesses impact you in a significant way when you're doing that process in the intuitive collage circle?
Yeah, I think, learning about the goddesses, and I think we all have an idea of who they are and what they're about, but learning about them in more detail and finding out about them and then using the images that Helena, you know, supplies, there is a different energy that comes through.
Mm-hmm.
Because each goddess has her own particular kind of energy. Using that to make something feels really empowering, or it feels like I'm connecting to a different part of myself.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Through that energy.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing about, you know, the reason we have these very powerful stories are that they tap into something inherent in the human psyche, you know, that is there in all of us, whether we recognize it in ourselves or not. And being able to touch that and use that and bring that forward is a really liberating experience in many ways.
Yeah.
Especially if the energy feels a little bit foreign to you, like in what you would ordinarily do in your everyday life, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How about you when you're making those collages and connecting to that, that goddess energy? What comes through for you?
Yeah, I think it's very similar for me. Especially, you know, I really enjoy the feeling of connecting with like a feminine force, you know, like a feeling of like the power of femininity, the power of the feminine that has gone back millennia. These stories, like the Greek myths, are still very much told through the lens of patriarchy. Like, there's no question about that. And there's still something in there for me in going back to like, here is a recognizable and recognized form of feminine power that I can tap into. And I think that's kind of what we're doing collectively right now.
Yes.
In our culture, whether we're overtly talking about that or not, although more and more we are overtly talking about that, that power is blossoming again in a way that it has not been able to for a very long time. And I find that aspect of it hugely rewarding for myself, you know?
Yeah.
This is a great question. I will say too, there's one other thing for me beyond collage. So yes. And it's not that recent, but I also loved to write poems as a teenager. And I left off doing that for quite a while. And for the past, I don't know, 3-4 years, I've come back to writing poetry. And I do find poetry writing to be just so, again, like, yeah, like intuitively led. I can really be led by my intuition, and I can really allow whatever comes to come, because I actually don't mind very much about the form.
You know,
for me, these are very free form poems. And very often they express something that I wasn't entirely aware I had going on under the surface. And that's been super valuable for me as well.
Yeah. It sounds like with both of those mediums, it's about, you know, expressing yourself intuitively. Hey?
Yes.
Going back to that root energy.
Very much so. I think with writing in particular, because writing for me has been a profession, it's like what I studied in school. It's I understand all the rules. The rules are very familiar to me. And I can follow them. I'm pretty good at it. I've been paid to do it. It's like, you know, that kind of feeling. Like,
yeah.
Structure. So to leave off doing that, to let go of that and be able to move into a freer, more expressive way of interacting with writing is really valuable, you know, and maybe that's what you're finding too with visual work, moving from that place, as you were saying, of like, okay, I have an idea of what I want to make and I have to do that, like moving that into something more intuitive is freeing you up.
Yeah, it's definitely more freeing.
The intuitive sense and following our intuitive sense is genuinely magical to me.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is.
I don't think there's anything more healing and anything more invigorating for me anyway, than to be able to work in that way and just allow.
Because you learn so much about yourself, and you just, you know, discover or rediscover things about yourself that you may have forgotten. So you're never going to regret working intuitively, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. This is such a great question. Thank you, Emily. Thanks so much.
Thanks for letting us reminisce.
And we love hearing your questions. We love to have you write in and say anything that you want to say. But if you have a question or you have anything else you would like to tell us, please feel free to email us at thecreativitycafe21@gmail.com or drop us a message on Instagram at thecreativitycafe21 there as well. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next time.
If you like the Creativity Cafe podcast, please subscribe and share it with other people who you think might like it too. Subscribing means that you never miss an episode, which means that we get to share all of these delightful conversations with you, knowing you'll get to hear every single one. You can subscribe by going to the show page on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and then just tapping on the plus sign or clicking on follow. It really helps the pod for you to do that. While you're there, if you'd be willing to leave us a rating and a review, we would love to have that too. We love to read what you think and hear your opinions, your thoughts, your feelings about the Creativity Cafe podcast. So please do go and leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everyone.